Okay, going to move along to item 7D, Sierra Nevada Conservancy. Good morning.
Good morning, supervisors. My name is Angela Avery. I'm here from the Sierra Nevada Conservancy. I'm the executive officer of the SNC, and I am really excited to be here to give you all a high-level overview of who we are as an entity, as a state agency, and how we work across the region that we've served since our inception, and really to talk about how we hope to serve all of you and the portion that was added to our boundary under SB 208. So I have a PowerPoint presentation. Before I begin, I also want to introduce Andy Vrostensky, who is here with me, and Thule Potts. Andy Vrostensky is our Field Operations and Grants Division Chief, and Thule Potts is our North Area Subregion Representative. She lives locally here in Mount Shasta, and we'll get into a little bit more about the roles that we all play here in just a second. So next slide, please. So SNC is a state agency, as you all know. We are a state conservancy under the California Natural Resources Agency. I think it's really important to note that we are not a regulatory agency. So I'm actually going to start with the things that we do not do, so that that's kind of clear from the outset. We're non-regulatory. We do not regulate land use or other activities on private land. We do not acquire ourselves and hold fee title on property directly. We do not exercise the power of eminent domain or condemnation, and we do not affect the water rights of anyone who is a water right, any water right that is held by others. So that's sort of out of the sort of laying the foundation for what we don't do. What we do is focus on forest and watershed health. We are primarily a granting entity and a convening entity. I think that we pride ourselves on being a regional expert, and we base our regional expertise on our local relationships, the relationships that we build on the ground, and the ways that we gather our expertise is by listening to our board members, the people we partner with, our stakeholders in a community, by engaging in collaboratives across a region. We're a triple bottom line entity. We really do focus on the environmental, economic, and social well-being of rural communities. That's the foundation of who we are. We think that forest health in many of the rural communities that we serve is the foundation to opportunities for job creation, additional infrastructure, help community safety, community health, those types and kinds of things. But we are a natural resources focused entity as opposed to a public health or other kind of entity. And so again, forest health really is at the foundation of what we do. We have one primary overarching initiative that we work under. It was codified in 2018. It's called the Watershed Improvement Program. That program has four regional goals under which we actually focus and funnel the state funding that comes to us, and then one regional goal where we really try and amplify the needs, opportunities, issues, from the regions that we serve into sort of the state realm for deeper understanding and hopefully additional funding. So the four regional goals that we can focus funding on under the Watershed Improvement Program are forest and watershed health. That includes recovery from large damaging wildfires. Resilient Sierra Nevada communities. This is where we think about community protection from large damaging wildfires. It's where we think about increasing wood processing infrastructure that can create jobs in rural communities. Resilient Sierra Nevada strategic land conservation. This is where we work with local communities to protect land and ensure access and other values and priorities that are important to a local community. And then vibrant rec and tourism. That's a big element of what we do, because we think that if you've got healthy forests and you're a rural community that really relies on rec and tourism as an economic driver that supports job creation in your location, then we want to support that by planning and making sure that you've got the natural resources around it that support, that are healthy and can support that, those economies. Next slide, please. So I've got a map here on the slide, and the region that we serve historically has been 25 million acres from the Oregon border down to Kern County. It's all or part of 22 counties as it exists today. You can see up in the top on the northeast portion of California, the little bubble that was added under SB 208. This adds portions of Trinity County, a little bit, the southern portion of Siskiyou County, I'll get into this again in a minute, and a little bit more of Shasta County than was already in the region that we serve. SB 208 was the driver of this. Senator Daley was the brain behind this particular expansion. We, as a state entity, cannot advocate for legislation. We did not advocate to add this portion to our boundary. But we do understand that the needs and issues that you all face, especially as to some of the conversations that happened earlier around wildfire and forest health, that resilience in those realms is something that we focus on in a place where we can engage and hopefully do good work with all of you in the region. So the new boundary adds the McLeod watershed, the Upper Sac watershed, the Upper Trinity watershed, and the remainder of the Pitt watershed that was not previously in our boundary. It's going to add just under 2 million additional acres and make the region that we serve 27 million acres and all are part of 24 counties.
So I have a question real quick. Yes. So the map was based on watersheds?
The map boundary that you see is based on watersheds. I believe that a driving factor behind the consideration of this was a bill that was passed a couple of years ago, which was AB 2551. It defined all of the watersheds that feed the state and central water projects, the state and federal water projects, as green infrastructure. Required some planning to be done. I also believe that there was early conversations about adding a new state board over those specific watersheds. And then I believe that Senator Daley, who served on our board back in our early days of creation when he was local supervisor, I think that he has experience and understanding, deep understanding of how we work as a state conservancy, very different from any kind of regulatory state agency that you might have in your minds. But he understands that we really do bottom-up work, right? We really do invest in local groups, efforts, and stakeholders. We really do try and hear the needs that are specific to a region, elevate those to the state stage for funding, for investment, for policy support as appropriate to a rural community. And I think that it was his experience on our board and understanding of us being incredibly effective, I'm tooting my own horn, but very effective grants makers, very effective conveners, very effective listeners, and very effective amplifiers of regional, local needs, local issues, and local opportunities. So I think that the combination of this proposal for this new state entity and Senator Daley's experience with us specifically led to this expansion, this proposed boundary expansion that is, to your point, based on watershed boundaries. Long answer to a short question. Okay, so we have the next slide, please. So SB 208, this is a little bit of a closer view, and I already mentioned this, added the northeast portion of Trinity County, the southern portion of Siskiyou County, and a little bit more of the northwestern portion of Shasta County to the S&C boundary. All of this takes effect on January 1st, 2022. And as mentioned, this all the expansion is all, the line and the boundary of the expansion is all based on watershed boundaries. As I understand it, this will impact District 1. We will then overlay District 1, District 2, and a portion of District 3 as it relates to your jurisdictions and districts. Next slide, please. So I wanted to do a little bit of a deeper dive into how S&C operates and how we're divided for based as it relates to how we are staffed throughout the region. I mentioned that we are sort of a bottom-up entity. We really do believe in the value of relying on people who live and work in a location to educate those of us who are in Sacramento advocating for regional needs and opportunities and issues. And so when SNC was created, we were divided into the six subregions that you see here. The boundary expansion will add, at least for the first year, Siskiyou County and the other counties that I mentioned, to the north subregion. I called out Julie Potts a minute ago as our north subregion area representative. She is our local on-the-ground eyes and ears. Her role in the agency is to develop projects for funding and consideration by our board. We'll get into our board here in a minute. But also to participate in local collaboratives, to understand where and how it makes the most sense for the SNC to engage, to make sure that we're supporting that the local perspective, the local needs, that we're not coming in with anything really top down. We're not trying to be big brother on any level. We really are here trying to support the work that you all are elevating for our attention, for the funding that comes from the state. Each one of the six subregions has a representation on our board on an annual basis. I'll get into that in just a second. And each one of those six subregions has an area representative who lives and works in the region. Most of the folks that play those area representative roles are local, born and bred and raised, as I think is the case with Thule. She's a good example of the types and kinds of people that we rely on in that eyes and ears role. The local perspective on our board is a really critically important element of how we work. I'll get into the makeup of our board here in just a second, but six of the 16 members on our board are local electeds. Six of the 16 total members on our board, 13 are voting. So the local elected perspective really is critically important to how we do business. And I'll get a little bit more into that here in just a second. So next slide, please. So I just mentioned this, but our board consists of 13 voting members and 3 non-voting members. By statute, our defining statute actually details how regional representation will rotate on our board. So I showed you the map of the six subregions that make up our region. Each subregion is 3 to 4 counties, depending on the definition that was set when we were created. You all have the responsibility and the and from our perspective, the opportunity to identify which of you is going to be represented on our board. The county, the subregional representation rotates through the counties that are in that individual subregion. We don't decide who sits on our board, you all do. So at the beginning of every year, you have a conversation with amongst yourselves and then with the other counties in your subregion to identify who will be seated as the county liaison, which is sort of the alternate, the backup, and then who will sit on the board for the 2-year term that is defined for local representation. I don't know how clear I was on that. It sort of rambled, so if you have questions, let me know. We'll do that. But it is defined in statute that, you know, this is an important part of how we work, and I can share that statute with you later on if you're interested. Next slide, please. So this is where you can kind of get a sense of who our board is made up of. So 6 local governments, the current North Subregion board member for the SNC is Aaron Alba from Lassen County. He is midway through his 2-year term now. Paul Rowan has served actually for 3 years, but there was a gap and he's going off at the end of December. Lori Parlin from El Dorado County, Rosemary Smolcomb is also going off at the end of this year. Nathan Magsig from Fresno County and Ron Haynes from the east side. We have 2 legislative appointments, Bob Johnston and Susanna Reyes. Bob Johnston has been a Senate appointee on our board since our inception. Then we have governor's appointments, a public member, 3 public members actually, and then 1 representative from the Department of Finance and 1 representative from California Natural Resources Agency. Jessica Morris is the Deputy Secretary for Forest Resources Management. She serves at the delegation of Wade Crawford, who is the Secretary of Natural Resources. So next slide, please. So what we can do for you. I mentioned that our focus is forest health. I mentioned that our primary initiative is the Watershed Improvement Program, and I talked about the four areas of focus where we focus our funding. So what current funding do we have available to us, and how quickly can you all access it, should you be interested? I would hope that you will be. We received $50 million in the governor's budget for this fiscal year. It is general fund funding to support wildfire and forest health and resilience and recovery. We will be bringing, if you look at our website right now, we have a board meeting this Thursday. The board materials include draft grant guidelines for the first half of that $50 million forest health funding. So we'll be approving, we assume, we hope our board will approve the guidelines as proposed that will focus again on forest health, so fuels reduction projects, that type of kind of thing, and then recovery. The details are very well laid out in the guidelines. So our expectation is that our board will approve those guidelines at the meeting on Thursday. We are holding release of that particular $25 million until January 1 so that your county, the areas that get added to our region are eligible applicants. And Tuli Plotz is the person that you would work with to develop projects for submission. She can also go into a lot more detail than I will hear now about timelines and so forth and so on. We will have the second tranche of that $50 million forest health. We will have a new set of guidelines that our board will approve in June. We expect to make that funding available soon after the board approves the new guidelines. We have, and again, that's under the four regional goals that I mentioned. This $50 million really supports the forest and watershed health element of the Watershed Improvement Program.
So I'm sorry.
Yes?
Do you submit grant proposals to the Forest Task Force, or do you get a tranche of that money?
Funding is coming directly to us so that our board, our staff develops the projects. We evaluate the project based on the criteria outlined in the guidelines. We make recommendations to our board, and our board approves those projects. So our board ultimately is the funding decision maker.
Okay. Another question. So I see the numbers up there. Is that a lot?
In the grand scheme of things, it is. It's not enough.
Right.
We have a 25, soon to be 27 million acre region. We know that our region is well over 40% in the high severity fire risk zone, according to the Public Utilities Commission. It's more than we've seen in bonds that the state has issued in the past. So when we started, we were Proposition 84 funded. We got $54 million in that bond. In Proposition 1, we got $25 million. And in Proposition 68, we got $55 million. So what you see here is $61.1 million in forest health and climate funding. I'll talk about that climate pot here in just a second.
So maybe the follow-up question, I think where I'm leading this, is that stable funding? Do we see that
Currently, the funding that we have available to us as outlined here is based on the budget surplus that the state experienced over the last fiscal year. It is not ongoing, sustained, long-term funding. It is, by the nature of it, one-time funding, as is bond funding. We believe the state will have another significant budget surplus in next fiscal year, so we are waiting with bated breath to find out what the administration includes the Conservancy for in the January 10 budget release. Our hope is that it will be another $50 million, but we'll know more in January.
I'm going to come back to my previous question. So what I'm trying to figure out is the money you're receiving on top of like the $300 million that the governor talks about, is that statewide or is this a separate appropriation?
This is part of the governor's, so at the end of last fiscal year and in this fiscal year, the governor approved a $1.5 billion appropriation focused on wildfire health. This is part of that. We got $50 million of that. Well, we got $20 million in early action funding, which our board spent immediately. And then we have, going into the future, this $50 million pot and the $11 million pot that you see here.
So, knowing that you're beholden to the state budget process, if you will, do you lobby for money, or do you let the, how does that work? Because currently we do have a surplus, I would think we want to get as much as we can.
Yes, we're a state entity, so we do not do lobbying. We are not able to lobby directly. We do what I call small A advocacy, which is we focus on education and outreach. Bringing legislators and funding decision makers into the region to understand and see firsthand needs, issues, opportunities. We also, that fifth regional goal under the Watershed Improvement Program is impactful regional identity. So we have a highly effective communications team that uses social media and creation of videos to really sort of drive the points home that, you know, about who we are as a state conservancy, about our effectiveness and really to, based on the communications and the interactions we have with our board members, to really represent appropriately how funding can be spent in our region to address needs and issues and that are of relevance to the state, right? But that have real impact locally. So we do outreach, we do education, we do not lobby. We do small advocacy and we build relationships.
I don't think lobbying was what you know what I'm saying.
Just, you know, state entity, have to tread carefully there. Be very clear.
Well, I think the beauty of it is that it's big enough, broad enough that it touches a lot of different places, a lot of different political spectrums, if you will. So you probably have a wide amount of support.
We have a lot of support from both sides of the aisle at the state in the legislature for the work that we do. I think there's a lot of understanding of the needs and issues. And we also, I think there's also a lot of understanding that we're pretty flexible and pretty nimble state entity that really does understand that the issues in the northern part of the state are very different than the issues in the southern part of the state, and that we do a really good job of responding to those with funding that we receive. So that $11 million pot, just so you are clear, I mentioned the $50 million will go to forest and watershed health, fire resilience, recovery, forest management, that type of kind of thing. The $11 million pot will go to the three other regional goals that I mentioned, so vibrant rec and tourism, land conservation, and resilience here in Nevada communities, and that's where that funding will focus. Our board will make the decision about how much. Staff will make recommendations and our board ultimately will make decisions about how many dollars go to each of those regional goals and what activities they support. An example of that again is the grant guidelines we're presenting to them this Thursday that they will act on or modify based on the conversation. So I think that sort of wraps up kind of the high level. It's hard to talk about everything that we do and 10 minutes or I think I've gone over time, but we're happy to meet with all of you, any of you at any point on Zoom to talk, to do a little bit of a deeper dive into how we can support you, how we can hear what your needs and issues are. Again, we don't presume to come in as the experts. We come in with an ear to listening and to understanding and to asking questions and then to really being responsive to those needs on the ground. So. I have business cards that I can hand out. Tuli knows how to get a hold of me. Tuli is a great first point of contact. She can pull in our other staff members who are experts in how we get funding on the ground, who can answer additional questions. But if there are other questions that I can answer, I'm happy to. But we are excited to be able to come into your region in a way that really does help you all address some of the issues that I've heard you talk about here today. Those large damaging fires, the scale of those are getting just out of control. I think we understand what works as it relates to managing forests, and I think that we have a good sort of understanding of all of the components of how you can address that holistically, thinking about how you benefit communities, rural communities, create jobs, and that type and kind of thing. So Hopefully you're happy to have us. We are happy to be here to serve you. And
I'm happy to have you.
We probably have some questions.
Yeah, I could be. Thank you, Mr. Chair. In regards to, I'm a member of the North Coast Resource Partnership. Mm-hmm. So, is there, in granting these dollars out, does it take into consideration counties that hadn't received that funding before and trying to split it up where every county receives a portion as it rotates along where no one's left out?
We have, I think it's in our defining statute that says that when we are making grant decisions, it's also in our guidelines, when we're making decisions about projects that are elevated to us from the local groups, one of the ways if we get, we are often oversubscribed for the funding that's available to us. So we reserve geographic distribution and geographic equity as one of the internal deciding factors, like a tiebreaker, if you will. It's important to us to make sure that we're serving our region well and in a balanced way, but it is not part of the project evaluation, it's part of the final deciding factor. Did I get that right, Andy? Okay, thanks.
No, you answered that, and then the rest of this kind of minutia details I can talk to you later, but I just want to add, I know my colleague down there is going to advocate for the highest fire risk area in the state of California. So I'll stop there.
Yes, we understand, and that's why I think our particular brand of work and our particular primary initiative is, in, I think it's a value add to all of you, and we want to be helpful.
Can you go back to the expansion map? Because it's interesting. I know Siskiyou, we've been a proponent of getting in, and we only earn a portion, but the expansion takes in part of Shasta and Trinity as well, I take it, right? That wasn't in the Conservancy before.
Correct. This the boundary that you see here, that is the expansion.
That's the expansion.
Area.
So yes, that's sir. Interesting as I'll get at, because I thought it was mainly Siskiyou, but. So is the rest of, for instance, Shasta County down below Shasta Lake, are they, they're not in it at all?
Correct.
Okay.
So it's the watersheds that feed the state and federal water projects that flow into the region that we serve. We cannot work outside of a very clearly defined boundary.
Okay, no, that's fine. I get it. And I think we brought up when we were first proponent for this, you know, bringing Siskiyou into it. We had talked, and I think Supervisor Happ, you had maybe, you know, in the whole of Siskiyou versus a portion, and I think we took the first bite of the elephant, and so I think we look future to maybe expanding it again, if that's possible, since this was something that was kind of on the radar. But don't forget about the rest of Siskiyou, so be thinking about that future. But tell me about what you think about fire recovery. What does that mean to you?
It means a bunch of different things. We're trying to make our recovery response specific to individual fires. So it can mean everything from taking burned logs out of forest. It can mean treating the landscape so that you can do reforestation. It can mean the actual reforestation. It really is sort of dependent on the scale of the fire and what the specific needs are, who the local groups are, who can take the money, how they're understanding what the opportunities are and what they elevate to us.
Can it be public land? Can it be?
Absolutely. We work on federal and private lands. Anything that's in our boundary, we can work on with the right applicants, right?
So you, I hear that from what you just said, and I'm, you're an advocate for replanting, restoring forests for future.
We believe it's an important thing, we don't want our forests to go away. I think there are a variety of things that have to be taken into consideration when you look at reforestation, and that is what the future has in store for us as it relates to heat and various other elements, and that you need to be thinking about how you reforest correctly. I think, you know, from our perspective, prescribed fire is an important element of a healthy forest ecosystem. That's a challenging conversation to have with a lot of people, but if you're thinking about reforestation and we know that fire is part of a healthy ecosystem in this region, then can you reforest with prescribed fire entry at years 8 and 15 and do that in such a way that the trees actually grow and you're getting the right space between trees and space in the canopy of the trees so that you can have really healthy forests. So,
That's good to hear. And then lastly, with regard to watershed sediment release after forest fire, can you talk about that a bit? Is there a long-term consequence to not getting back in there and reforesting more quickly like we see on private lands more so than we do on federal?
It's a really good question. So in our experience, when you've got a burned landscape, you have about 4 years of time before the roots of burned trees sort of deteriorate to such a point that they start to release the soil in heavy rain events. So we do believe that erosion and post-fire sedimentation is a critically important thing that you need to consider. And so reforestation does help stabilize slopes in historically forested landscapes. We think it is really an important thing that needs to happen. The timing, we rely on science and scientists to sort of talk about the timing. We rely again on local folks to understand how quickly the shift on the landscape is actually happening to develop the projects that we can then fund for implementation.
Thank you. To the other, the other part of Siskiyou County, is that, do you know if that's connected at all to the Coastal Conservancy? And, you know, I guess, do you partner with other conservancy on projects?
I do not have memorized the Coastal Conservancy boundary, but I do believe that their boundary does go along the California-Oregon border into Siskiyou County. I have not ever spoken to them about that. I need to speak to them. We don't partner with other conservancies, but we do meet with them because oftentimes there are 10 state conservancies across the state of California. We are, like I said earlier, we're a little bit more nimble than some of the bigger, larger regulatory agencies, but some of our issues, funding, recognition, understanding of our regional expertise, the value of the relationships we build with our stakeholders, the fact that we're not top down. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of common themes in how conservancies work across the state. So we work to understand what those shared issues and opportunities are amongst ourselves, but we don't necessarily, because our regions don't generally overlap.
Right, but you know, and I don't mean to interrupt, but you know, I'm looking up there like Calhoun. Which I'd love you to be in my district, by the way, but you know, that would be you know, so something where if that was connected, that would, because it's a watershed, it's fire resistance, it's all that.
Right. I think the Coastal Conservancy received some of that same wildfire resilience funding that we did, and so we will be having conversations. We do need to go and sit with them once this goes into effect to understand the overlap between the two conservancies, and I think that there are opportunities.
It's all new to me, so I'm just trying to learn that way. Thank you.
Tourism and recreation?
Mm-hmm.
What?
Well, so the climate funding that I mentioned, that $11 million pot, which we do hope will come back and at the same level next year, will fund general priorities that are outside of forest and watershed health. So resilient Sierra Nevada communities, vibrant rec and tourism, and land conservation. Under vibrant rec and tourism, that was a relatively new pot of money that we received under Proposition 68. Couple of years ago now. We have funded recreation planning at large scales. We've funded trails implementation. We've funded the permitting and environmental support that needs to go into a recreation project ahead of time. Other examples?
We've funded a pit toilet.
We paid for pit toilets. Some of the bigger projects that we funded with the limited amount of recreation and tourism dollars that we've had available in the past are, there is a Connected Communities project in Plumas County that is based on mountain biking trails that connect eight different communities in that region. And so We're supporting the planning that will ultimately end up in trail implementation that connects all of these communities so that there is a tourism element to having this as an opportunity that can be highlighted. So, am I answering your question?
You are.
Okay.
I have a lot of other things on my mind that I can talk to you about.
Okay.
Sorry. Of this thing. Okay.
So, from my perspective, I want to go back to even before I was on this board. I watched your board, and I think the Sierra Nevada Conservancy has a better reputation than most of the conservancies in the state. And I believe it's because of the local control. The others, I didn't support the expansion into the county from the south from the one that's underneath. Mm-hmm. Chastelet, primarily because it was appointed by the governor, or would have been appointed by the governor and driven by appointees outside the local area. You just wanted to work a couple things from my perspective. I want to talk about one. This board ratified about a year ago a master stewardship agreement with all three national forests within our boundary. So that can be used as a tool for leverage, for sure. This board also designated two pilot areas in the county some years ago for forestry work and fire resilience. And one of them was in Scott Valley, for which I worked with Roger Bales and Dr. York to do a research project there on forest densities. So I'm particularly interested in forest densities, catastrophic wildfire, and water yield. And would love to see some of that done in our other pilot area that is inside your boundary, which is around Lake Siskiyou. It's a primary recreation area. We can't suffer a catastrophic fire in it without tremendous losses to the tourism industry. It also is a water yield issue for us with forest densities and contributing to our hydropower plant at Bass Canyon Dam. So we have a vested interest to do a lot of work there. I look forward to working with you. The boundary, here's what I do in a redistrict, if you will, move this boundary into my district, primarily because the conservancy that represents my district, and I'm Callahan West, past Happy Camp, Sand River area, we have little in common with the West Coast wet system. We're dry interior, and as a result, the fuels projects that come out of that conservancy are largely fish-oriented and geared toward high densities that you might find on the coast and not in the interior, which is a complete antichrist, if you will, for a forest in our part of the biosphere here. So I look forward to doing that. Further conversations. Got a history there. I've seen you do some wonderful work, and I think it'd be a great way to leverage some dollars and get some work done on the public lands, which is about 62% of our land base in this county, and burning everywhere.
Well, thank you for that. We definitely look forward to learning more about your county and to understanding, again, the needs and how we can be responsive to those. So thank you for the opportunity to present to all of you today. I definitely look forward to the opportunity to get to know each of you better and more personally. And I have an open door policy. So I'll leave my contact information with all of you. Please don't hesitate to reach out at any time.
And I plan on attending the meeting on Thursday via Zoom. That's
okay, good.
And just so you know, I know at least three of the supervisors personally. As a matter of fact, just spoke to Ron Ames, Supervisor Ames down in Monterey. So, and we had a conversation with your concerns.
Excellent. Okay. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Take care.
Thank you.
Yes. We're going to take a break for lunch, though, at some point.
Yeah, I know.
Okay.
Next is the Silver Grant jury topic, 7C.
Yep. Looks like we've got a couple.
Morning still. I'm Steve Thornburg. I'm this year's foreman of your civil grand jury and the calendar year. I'm also president of the Siskiyou County chapter of the California Grand Jurors Association, which is here to support the functions of the grand jury so that they can investigate the things that are called on to investigate and report their findings and recommendations to the public. I feel a little bit behind today because we've been throwing great big numbers around, and we're here to talk to you about what, 0.0001% of your total budget, $15,000. Bernie Paul will be, I've been in on grand jury for 5 years over the past 14. Bernie's first year, so Bernie will be coming in to talk a little bit about some of the things he sees as a first year grand juror. But I believe the reason we're here is because as a grand jury, our budget has been slashed to the point where we cannot function anymore. We have done a good job over the past 14 years, I think, of being told that our budget needs to be cut, and we do cut our budget, and then at the end of the year, when we do cut it, it's cut some more. And each year we've come back, and the last year in 2019 that there was a grand jury, they almost used their entire budget, but they were only in force for almost 8 months before COVID took them out. And they would have run out of money and not been able to, and the product that they were producing has not been yielded yet. Some of the things that have contributed to this are, if you've never been in our grand jury room, but there's not one piece of equipment in there that's on the county book, so we can't get our broken copy machine that's been broken since 2014 service. We have 3 printers, 2 of which have been donated by private people, and none of them are on the books for the county, so we can't get anything serviced there. We have 1 printer working. None of our computers are newer than 12 years old, and we can't use the state association's mandated Microsoft Office to communicate with our IT people here, who have been great at working with us and trying to bring us into the 21st century. Most of the jurors supply their own pens, pencils, paper. We all use our own laptops. And we have a great deal of effort we put into representing this county. And we've combined our travel budgets and our travel and our meetings and our interviews with people to the point where we just can't do any more interviews. And as a matter of fact, one of the things that we've had to deal with this year, we don't even have a name tag that we can go out, and if I'm interviewing you as a private person in public, I can't prove that I'm on grand jury. That was cut out because of budgetary reasons this year. And it makes it difficult when we're meeting with someone who doesn't know who we are to identify ourselves. And part of the process is the grand jury is, because we have new people every year, we have no say in the budget process. So today I hope to do 2 things. Number one, have you understand that we need to do some things to complete our mission this year. We have 4 things that we're required by the state constitution to do. 2 of them are the Deadwood Fire Camp, and report on that. We must do an inquiry there. We must do an inquiry to the county jail because of the way the state has changed the inmates that are being housed there now. So those are 2 things we must report on to the public. We must do 1 county agency, and that's a complete investigation. And we have not, because of the budgetary constraints for at least the last 3 years, been able to look at just any complaints that have been submitted to us. And that affects the public at large. So that's my part to start with right now. Bernie, you have some comments you wanted to make as a first time juror.
Yeah, I'm Bernie Paul. This is my first year on the grand jury. And a couple things really kind of jumped up to me. One, this year's grand jury is a real strong grand jury with a big diverse background and a lot of experience from a lot of folks that have worked in government and know how it works. So we have an opportunity to do a lot of things. We just don't have any funds to be able to go do anything. We actually went through and trained everybody and kind of got our marching orders and then pretty much done at that point. So we're kind of struggling there a little bit. A couple of things that jumped out is we're lacking an advocate within the county. We don't really have anybody to go to for it. And the agenda is a perfect example that we're on the public request and not a county request. I kind of view us as part of a county business operation. And so that's one thing that we need to look at. Who kind of is our advocate? Who do we go to in the county to be able to do our functions? And a couple other things that are out there, not only with our skills and ability to do it, you know, our current funding is pretty much going to shut us down before we can even get started. The ID cards Steve talked about is really important thing to be able to identify ourselves on, especially meeting with people and doing different interviews to get to the bottom of things that we actually need to be able to have our ability to represent who we are and where we're from. And one of the last things I have, the retention and recruitment is makes it really tough when we don't really have anything really to work with and a budget. And you know, our room up there, we're not complaining about it, we'll make it work, but it's really small. People kind of come into there, we're trying to recruit to get on the grand jury. You know, it's a struggle. The morale's kind of down. You know, we're being told we're pretty much done before we even get started. So that's why we're here, trying to just throw that out there. Here we are, this is what we need, and we're a strong grand jury. We want to work for you and the public, and you know, we're real willing to take things on and get things done for you.
Thank you, Bernie. The California Grand Jurors Association 2 weeks ago had their annual seminar, and one of the things they talked about there was that as far as you as the Board of Supervisors are concerned, we are probably the most underutilized resource you have available to you. I mean, as grand jurors, we're all in it for the money. We like our $15 a day. But how often have you as the Board of Supervisors expressed an opinion as to what you might want to see from the grand jury? In the 14 years that I've been associated either with the grand jury or the Grand Jurors Association, I have never once been asked by the supervisors to investigate or look at anything. Not that we would be forced to do it.
I've asked for it to be to investigate the pay of the supervisor. That
was back in 17 years ago, correct?
Well, I haven't been around.
Okay. So anyway, all I want to do today is I want to point out that we are an important resource to the county, and we should be looked at a little differently than we have been looked at. I think we need next year's budget we plan on submitting to you, and it will reflect the fact that we don't have working computers to tie in with the county system. So when you see a report that has been published, it has typographical errors and things because someone else is retyping it. We can't do it on the county system because of the differences in what CGJA, California Grand Jurors Association, supports and what the county supports in their IT department. Now, I think Judy Crawford could easily, and her people down, and the people she works with down there, could easily handle the issues and they're offering to. It's to get, but we'll need some financial resources, and we need some computers that we can use that belong to the county. Right now, we all use our own laptops and our own computers to do things. I thank you. If you have any questions, we'll try to answer them.
Sure. So,
pardon?
I'm just trying to think how to frame this. So, talk about the relationship between the state, basically, the judges, because you're overseen by the judges.
Correct.
We just kind of fund you, per se. Is that correct?
Or no.
How does that work? Give us the...
Yeah, well, let's see, it was 22 years ago the state of California separated the functions of the overseer, which was the superior court, and they used to handle the not only the administrative and appointment of grand jurors, but they handled the financial side too. When they separated the financial side and gave that to the counties, they did what they normally do. They didn't send a paycheck or checks along with it to help. They just said, here, you have to fund the grand jury. The high level during that period of 22 years was back, I think, 17 years ago when the grand jury budget was $87,000. And it's been averaging around 20, around a little under $29,000 for the past 10 years. Comparable grand juries in other counties our size are substantially funded higher than that. And the last year we have any numbers for was 2019 for full grand jury service. Amador County, with a population of 38,000, had a $42,600 budget for their grand jury. That year, our budget was $25,000. Calaveras County, with a population about the same as ours, is $116,446. Glenn County, 27,900 population, was 110,000. Lake County, 64,000 population, was 63,000. So you can see we've been doing the job that we can, but the quality of the reports that we issue to you and the type of investigations we get into are severely limited because Siskiyou County, what, second or third largest geographical county in the state, and our jury does not represent the county right now. We are an I-5 corridor jury. We don't have representation from Tule Lake and Doris and McLeod and Happy Camp. If we did, the basic budget, if we had one person from each corner of the state and we had just 12 or 14 plenary meetings a month or a year, that budget would get closer to $100,000 just to cover their travel. So I think the $15 a day we're paid was set back in 1963 or so. Nobody complains about that. You know, we're all here as volunteers. We believe in what the grand jury is here to do. We're here to investigate, report our findings and recommendations to the public, and hold you, our elected and appointed county officials, accountable to us, the people you're supposed to represent. We need a little bit bigger budget to be able to finish what we've started this year, and then we'll address next year's budget whenever the county starts doing their budget process. And Bernie was right. We have not had an advocate outside of the county council's office, Dana, who has helped us tremendously over the past years. So, any other questions?
I'm curious from the CAO's perspective on this budget request. When I look through it, I'm not doubting things. I'm just I see something line item as a contingency. It sounds like slush fund to me, and I'd like that defined.
Most counties on their budget will have something that's called a contingency fund, or it's a place where you hold money that you know you're going to have to dip into later on. I don't know what it's called here, but apparently we don't have a contingency fund. And I know things have been tough for the past few years, but we're not asking for a lot. We just want to be able to do what we're required to do constitutionally without getting the court involved.
I understand. However, in the grand scheme of things, 2 weeks ago we've been fined $500 in the budget to fund something pretty important. Anyway, I'm going to defer where this is going. I don't know if it's in the budget. I don't know, where we're headed.
Angela Davis, County Administrator. With regards to the additional funding that is being requested, no, we do not have it in the budget. However, if the board directs so, we would have to cut a department's budget in order to supplant those additional funds. Staff have met with the grand jury to discuss the inability of finding the funds. Rachel York, our deputy CAO for finance, she did an extensive search of possibilities, and it would just be a matter of taking it from another department if, like I said, the board so choose. If I may, with regards to the ID badges, they were not cut from the budget. We no longer have the ability to make the ID badges, so we did ask them to please seek the court's assistance with those ID badges because they do have the ability from what we were informed by the courts. I just wanted to clarify that was not, that it was cut from the budget. And he is correct in that contingency, we do not have, Siskiyou County, we do not have a contingency line item. We have, you know, something to the effect of provisions, which is general fund dollars, but that is specifically set aside for a catastrophic emergency, for, you know, a roof caving in or something of that nature. And that's been depleted as well, so.
Okay. Yeah, I don't want to cripple you either, but I do want to see something come out of the civil grand jury. And case in point for me, you know, I've been sitting there for 7 years, and I know there's a lot of things that need to be investigated. And I'm confounded that every year it never makes it onto the docket. I personally, after witnessing a lot of things, the fires of 2015, sat down as a technical expert with the grand jury for over 4.5 hours. Didn't even get 2 paragraphs out of that. And so, I mean, I'm looking for some meat in what you do, rather than being flesh and producing the same thing, I guess. So, Chris?
Yeah, I just had one question and one statement. My aunt was the grand jury foreperson back in the 90s. Mm-hmm. Do you guys do criminal cases? Does the district attorney come before the grand jury? I couldn't remember for indictments or those sorts of things.
I think that was before I got involved. There was one in Tule Lake, and then there was one that was not referred by the grand jury, but the grand jury looked into something to do with Thornbrook in the distant future, you know.
Right. I didn't know if it did that. I think it did years ago, but I don't know if it still does.
Yeah. Well, when anytime there's any kind of a criminal element that pops up, we must consult with the judge, county counsel, and usually go to the district attorney. And if there's criminality involved in it, we usually bow out.
Okay. And then the next statement, I just got a text from the department head, so they could probably do the name tags. Okay. Sure, that the game's about to resume. The victory here, but there's a department head that said, I just got a text, said, hey, let them know I can do name tags. So we'll share that with the team. No, thank you, that's all I had to say. So the different lay I have, too, is for the budget. When I ran for office in 2011, the board had just made some cuts for the library. System, which I am fine with. So when you run for office, you're supposed to criticize that and say you'll fix it, but I didn't want to lie. And so I told people, you know, a librarian can throw the book at you, but it takes a deputy to put you to settle the peace. And so for me, the difficulty, you know, we want to fund, but I don't want to take any deputies off the street or do any of those, you know, essential services we have to do.
Well, I think one of the things there, Supervisor Haupt, you brought up that you haven't seen any meat. In 2011, I believe the grand jury that year did 2 reports on the library, one on the court library and one on the Siskiyou County Library, that resulted in some significant improvements to both.
I've been here since 2015.
Thank you.
So where are we going with this?
Let me say a few comments if I want. So I've been here long enough. I will tell you that I take this as a constructive criticism, if you will. You know, we get a report, goes in the newspaper. You know, I think you got to up your game a little bit. You come to me for money. We have limited resources. Having said that, you know, I disagree. You should not be part of the county. You should be separate because you have to investigate the county.
Us.
Right? Us. Well, all of us. Mm-hmm. And I'm serious. Well, I've said I've requested more than at least twice I know of to look at the pay of the supervisors, because you know we have difficulty trying to adjust what I think is a fair rate, if you will. Mm-hmm. And so, having said that, I personally am supportive of seeing whatever that budget is looking forward. I mean, I think for me the appropriate time is at budget time. I will say this though: I think we have some ARPA funding. I think we could justify some money there to investigate, because there has been some. I think the COVID with the jail. Think about what's happened in the jail with the how we've had to handle the protocols, if you will. I would be willing to allocate some funding there. I'm not all of it. Again, I think the appropriate time is like budget time. And when I say some money, I'm thinking like $5,000 to get it through the rest of the year to buy the maybe you can prioritize the equipment that you so desperately need, if you will.
We can get by with our equipment the rest of this year. We want a long-term be able to.
I'm just trying to justify giving you some money.
Right,
I don't need to, who's what's the wise.
But I'd like to know who you ask to evaluate supervisors and come and compare it to other counties. Because the request that I know of never came to the jury.
It's water under the bridge, because in my world of view, shouldn't be you asking us. You should be taking some initiative on yourself to, I know you have to do the Deadwood, I know you have to do the jail, but beyond that, redistricting just came up. Could you look at that? I mean, you know, it shouldn't be for me to tell you what to do.
That's true. Thank you.
Okay.
We'll have, I thought we were going to decide today.
No, we can't. You what?
It's on the recommended motion.
Yeah, what are your thoughts?
I have just a point of clarification. The ask here is for this year or is this next year's budget?
My understanding is for this year. This week.
Correct?
Yes.
Yes.
Can we propose half this and come back if we fall short?
Are you proposing half to this now?
Half of the request at this time?
I would ask if we could look at the ARPA funding, because I think there's a complete nexus with the jail that they have to do.
Yeah.
Right? That's to me where I would use, because we all know we'd have no money sitting there idly doing nothing. So.
That's why I'm in an uncomfortable space right now trying to figure out where to go with this. I know there's a request on a motion to approve a full amount. I'm not there without some additional staff work on this.
I would hate to see some other department who's already cut to have to give up more when we could do some creative finance, and even if it maybe not at the total amount, but at least help you in some way. But we can't take blood from a turnip at this point. Our departments have cut all that they possibly can, and I just don't see that happening.
Can I suggest then that this be staffed up and bring a proposal, an actual proposal back to us that we could decide on?
Absolutely. I cannot guarantee that it'll be here on next week's agenda, just simply because of the timing, but absolutely, it'll be in the first meeting in January. We can bring back, because that will then allow us the time to vet the ARPA funds and some nexus there and possibilities of other.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Thank you, the chair.
Yeah.
So, just for clarification, in the past, one, I do agree that you should be separate, and it's been my understanding, as long as I've been on this board, that we're not to talk to you because you're a separate entity. That county council is our go-between. So if that would be, in my mind, your advocate is county council's office. But my understanding has been that come the end of December, you cut off all investigations because you're putting together the last 6 months, July through December, to formulate what will go out in the report in June. So how will any funding at this point help that cause?
Well, we still have a report to get out, and we're not done with investigations either. We have
but
to take a look
take
at what
new ones, correct, after the first.
We may have new ones that we would open up.
Okay.
We've had other things that we've done. The problem is that we've started a couple of things, and we need to be able to finish the couple that we have going there. I think you get a little bang for your buck this year on one or two of them. But that doesn't say that somebody might not file a complaint that we need to take a look at. So far, we've gotten, I believe, 7 complaints in, and we have elected not to look at them because we know we can't follow up on them.
So I know in the past, and this is not a criticism, but people that have submitted investigations in the past have been rejected because of the time frame of the year, and it's usually after the first of the year.
Yeah, that's true. And if it's something that looks like it could be, it's passed on to the next jury.
Right.
And they may want to look at it.
Right.
But there are also a lot of things that come into us that are way outside of the scope of our investigation. Most things that do come into the jury are not things where we're permitted to investigate.
Okay. And then lastly, I mean, constructive criticism, I'll say that. It's frustrating, at least from the public's view, to see a report from the grand jury come out, and it's usually the end of the story.
And that's
difficult to, to me, the grand jury plays a role in identifying and then actually an action occurring versus just proposing a report. And I don't know how we...
But that, I'm glad you mentioned that, because the grand juries has all the authority in the world to get just about any piece of information that we want to get from anybody, except in some juvenile cases and things like that. But we have no power to change anything. Our sole power is what we put in our reports, in our findings and recommendations. It's up to you or the citizens of the county to do something about it. We can't fix a thing. We can simply find out what's going on and report on it. So that part of the puzzle,
I'm going to add on to that. So what's the judge's role?
The judge supervises. She appoints supervisors, and she has total control over how we function.
So if you have a finding, we'll say, and you have a report, does the judge have any obligation at that point either to take action?
Well, the judge is kept in the loop in terms of how we're going about conducting business all year long. We consult with the county counsel's office on a regular basis before we start an investigation and as we go along. Mm-hmm. And we may have one or two times that we'll consult with the district attorney because they're part of our legal advisor team. As we go through the process and develop our findings and recommendations, a report is written, and the county council takes a look at that report for liability issues, and then it goes to the judge for her input and legal issues, right now Judge Dixon. And then before it's released, it goes back to the entity that's been investigating, so they take a look at the findings and recommendation, not the full report, but the findings and recommendations to make sure that there's nothing that we have in those findings and recommendations that are incorrect or that have been fixed already.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. So I'm going to jump down and take the whole topic 8B, and then we're going to go to lunch.